WNST, Towson Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We're keeping calm, we're staying local, and we're getting out to the 21228, where life is great and our friends at State Fair are bringing out the chicken and the waffles and the shrimp and the grits. I'm going to get some chicken wings. I'm going to get the special Thai barbecue sauce. I'm going to bring up some Obey wings as well. Don Moeller's out there. He can just drive up and curbside it, but I'm downtown where Fadley's is, and I'm due for a crab cake before we get started with this, Don.
I tell you, it's staying close to home, but our friends and supporters of Baltimore Positive doing a great job. All of our friends at Fadley's, we talked that they'll ship those famous crab cakes all over the United States, but even better than that, now they've been approved for curbside delivery, so just call or go on the website. They'll bring it right to your car when you pull up. Our good buddies at State Fair and Kate Phil breakfast, lunch, dinner, again, they'll bring it curbside. Easy. They'll even deliver if you live in the Catonsville area. And more importantly, Nestor, they're jumping in now on this whole food supply issue, and they're putting together boxes of produce and protein, really everything you need for a couple of weeks of groceries, and they'll bring that box right to your car. You don't even have to get out of the car. You don't have to run to the grocery store. Good things they're doing up there, our friends Evan Brown and Keith Holsey at State Fair. And believe it or not, the real estate business is moving forward. Jeff Moeller and our friends at Moeller and Gary Realtors continuing to sell homes, list homes, buy homes, you name it. Settlements are going on with our good friends up there at Crown Title. They're doing settlements out in the parking lot on picnic tables. So business is moving forward. And all of our good friends at KO Public Affairs, Damian O'Doherty, Steve Carney, the whole gang there, who really helped us put together Health Week. We've had Arts Week, now we're having Health Week, we're going to have Education Week as we continue to try to connect folks during the pandemic. And our next guest, I can't think of a stronger guest who has a better understanding of the whole healthcare industry in the state than Gene Ransom, the CEO of MedKai, the Maryland State Medical Society. I've known Gene for a long time, and Gene, welcome aboard to Baltimore Positive.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate what you guys are doing. I am a proud University of Baltimore Law School grad, and I, even though I'm an Eastern Shore resident and lifetime Shore guy, I consider myself a Baltimore guy, too. I love working in downtown and have for the last 25 years.
Well, we got Kurt Schmoke coming on, and that's on my bucket list. So Don Moeller's been working that up. So we got a little UB angle, and I was going to say we could ship you some Fadley's crab cakes across the bridge over into Queen Anne's County. But you guys are a Baltimore organization. You base yourself out of here, but you serve the entire state. And when you talk about the front end of COVID-19, I mean, like, you're in the medical side of all of this stuff. At what point does it wind up on your desk, or doctors start talking to you about it? And I mean, geez, I was in South Korea and I was in Japan in December. I came home, my wife spent a month in bed in January, and we saw this thing coming out of China, and now we look back 3 months later and think maybe we were exposed to it, but we can't get a test. And so much of this has been murky, certainly coming out of the federal side of things, if you watch the parade every night around 6 o'clock. But I think locally, Larry's done an unbelievable job of not only that, but the last 6-7 weeks, but the tests now have shown up here. We've kind of been on the front end of all of this in a lot of ways, in a lot of good ways so far, and I know we want to keep that up, and it has helped us keep doctors safe and nurses safe and everything, and citizens safe here in Maryland.
Yeah, I think the governor and everybody actually in Maryland has done a really good job working together. I think that's one of the things we should be proud of. But I'll start at the beginning. And MedKai has been based in Baltimore pretty much since it was originally started in 1799 in Annapolis, and then they ended up having their first headquarters in the city. And actually, we have 4 buildings in Mount Vernon. We are neighbors to the University of Baltimore. So Kirk Schmode and those folks at UB are our neighbors. So we appreciate the fact that we've been there. We've been in our current location since 1909. And love it there, and love being part of the history of Mount Vernon right across from the Meyerhof. It's a great place to be headquartered out of, right near the health department. As far as as our role, we are the Maryland State Medical Society. We represent physicians. So we, from the very beginning of this, we actually sent our first press release out about this back in January. I was looking at that just the other day, kind of warning folks that we better be paying attention to this. And actually, MedChi did the first continuing medical education on COVID back in February. We were the first medical society anywhere in the United States to do it. So our public health committee, Dr. Bruno and those folks were saying, hey, we might have an issue here very early on. What we've been doing as part of the process is we've been working with the health department doing regular calls with the physicians where they can get answers from one of the deputy health officers, Dr. Haft, three times a week. We were originally doing them five times a week. We're helping doctors deal with things like not having enough personal protection, PPE. We're dealing with doctors who are running businesses. A lot of physicians are in private practice and need help filling out disaster relief forms. Other doctors are having other types of clinical concerns and clinical questions because this is a new disease with new issues. So we've been incredibly busy and running at full speed, trying to help everybody move forward under the new world we're in with this COVID situation.
Well, I would say with the medical people, in the real society, and you put on news every day, and you walk through Baltimore, you walk through anywhere, you see people gathering without masks, without gloves. The educational part of this, I would think with your group of people, that they're the ones doing the educating, that there's been no problem getting them to buy into science or having watched the movie Contagion, that this is real and can be real and has become real literally over the last 90 days for every doctor that's ever studied, like, if things ever really went wrong, this is sort of what could happen to make things go wrong. We've had to educate everyone in our society. And I remember my wife was diagnosed with cancer 6 years ago, that they told me, you got to wear gloves. You got to wear a rubber suit. You got to wear a mask. You can't be around people. You got to stop hugging people around you because if you take something into the hospital, it will cost your wife her life. And I've lived even when I met you, I'm sure I elbow bumped you because I just have lived that way. And I think getting the rest of society to buy in on this, this is what doctors and scientists and educated people have had to really do and still are doing in places like Georgia this week and South Dakota and these other places where I'm thinking to myself, aren't your doctors driving this? Because if doctors were driving this, safety first would be the first thing in everyone's mind, right?
And one of the things that's worked in Maryland is the fact that we haven't had a situation where this has become political. It really has been done in a bipartisan fashion. You know, Governor Hogan's a Republican. The leaders of the General Assembly are Democrats. But everybody's really focused on what the science says and following the science and making good decisions on that. And I think for anybody who has been down at Johns Hopkins and seen these folks who are on ventilators and how quickly they crash when they get COVID, this is not the normal flu. This is not like any other disease. It has a much higher mortality rate, and it needs to be taken seriously. And I know there are a lot of people who are hurting economically, but we need to balance the public health with that and make sure that we do it in a judicious manner. This is not new, actually. 100 years ago, we had the Spanish flu, and famously, Philadelphia opened up too quickly, and they had a big parade and a celebration. And as a result of opening up too quickly, a whole lot of people got sick and they had a reoccurrence of the pandemic and a bunch of people died who didn't need to. So I'm hoping that history doesn't repeat itself and we make decisions based on science, not decisions based on politics.
Well, Gene, that's such an important point. And again, you just gave that Philadelphia example from decades ago. I saw someone the other day post something that I thought really spoke to the issue. And they said, look, all these folks who are beating the drum to perhaps open prematurely are really disrespecting the folks that you represent who have been going in and working for weeks now without a day off, putting their own lives at risk, and people now who want to reopen before perhaps it's time and safe to do so, are really disrespecting the 20-some thousand people that you represent.
Well, we saw the doctor in Denver the other day, right? That incredible, I mean, one of the incredible images, I think, to come from this was the doctor out in the crosswalk, right?
Well, but I will say this, too, and I don't get I don't get upset about it. I look at it very rationally, because we also have to take into consideration that a lot of people are hurting economically, and it's really tough. So you can understand that if they've been fortunate enough not to be affected by it, your focus is to think about that economic harm. But I just urge people to think about the reality is that a month is going to hurt economically, but we'll get back on our feet. There's no long-term problem with the U.S. economy or the Maryland economy. Once things get going again, we'll be back to normal. Listening to the physicians and the public health officials will end up with us being in a better position. For the folks who want to open and open too soon, if we have a crisis like we did in 1919 with the Spanish flu in Philadelphia, we'll have a situation where they will actually be worse off economically than they are if they open right now. And I just think one of the things that it can be very hard to do, but we just need to think in a rational way where we understand that, yes, everybody's hurting economically, and yes, everybody wants the economy. My doctors want the economy to open up. Remember, a lot of the physicians I represent are really hurting financially because they do a lot of elective procedures that aren't happening. Some of them have volumes that are down by 70 and 80%, and they're in real financial hardship too. So they're working really hard, and they're putting a lot of hours in, but they can't bill a lot. So they agree with you on this economic issue.
We just talked to a member, to a representative of the Dental Association, and you can speak to this as well. People forget about this. There are a lot of young docs out there who just got out of med school, beginning their practices with a ton of debt, who suddenly now have no income.
Mm-hmm.
Is that accurate?
Nope. It's a major issue that, and particularly if you're in certain specialties for medicine, you're just shut down essentially. Now, one of the things that we're doing to help physicians continue to practice is we've been working to implement telemedicine, and that's something MedKai has been right in the center of. We've probably helped 200 or 300 practices in the state implement it, and we're continuing to work to help doctors so they can bill and code for it. Telemedicine really hadn't been implemented by many physicians across the United States, mostly because insurance companies never paid for it, and now they've been forced to pay for it with the crisis. And that's one thing that might really change in America. Telemedicine might be something that we use a lot more of, and it's certainly something that's happened in the last month since we've had this whole situation.
We are joined by Gene Ransom, joining us here from MedKai. And Don, you get together socially sometimes with Gene and talk about all these things and bringing this forward. It's always nice to get a friend on Baltimore Positive, right?
Well, it is. We've known each other for a long time. And when Gene started this conversation, we may actually have skipped over the lead. And I want to jump back to it, Gene, because when you said it, it sort of hit me like a ton of bricks. You said, MedKai actually put out a notice in early January that this could be around the corner, and we better be ready. Talk to us more about that communication, because that's a pretty sobering thought that you guys were on top of this in January. And again, I'm not going to draw you into the politics of what's happening nationally.
No, that's my job.
That's an interesting time. Like, tell us what you all were communicating back there in January.
Right. So our public health committee, our public health chair, Dr. Richard Brino, and our president, Dr. Michelle Manahan, they really were concerned. There was enough evidence coming from China that us, as a state medical society, felt it was important to communicate out. And if you look on our website, you can read our first press release saying, hey, we might have an issue here. And then shortly after that, we did a continuing medical education on it. We were the first medical society to do that. And I think one of the things, and again, we're a nonpartisan organization. We're not Republican or Democrat. We don't care. But I think there are legitimate criticisms about the federal government's failure to move quickly, failure to take this seriously, failure to procure testing in an adequate manner. And we still have a shortage of testing. Now, hopefully in Maryland, the governor recently announced the 500,000 tests from South Korea, and that should help us here. And the vice president recently announced access to the federal labs. So those two acts should hopefully increase the amount of testing. But we're not doing near the testing work we need to be doing even today to really fight this pandemic. So I just think that's one of the big failures here. And when we're making notes about things we need to learn from this whole episode, I would say number two is take things seriously and be prepared. But number one, the biggest takeaway, the thing we need to change in this country after this, is personal protection equipment needs to be manufactured in America. If there's one thing we should learn, we should not be so reliant on masks and gloves from China. It just puts us at a risk as a country. It's a national security issue. That's another major failure from a policy point of view of our government, and it's something that needs to change. And I hope the two things that I hope that we really do differently going forward is, one, we figure out how to manufacture PPE, personal protection equipment, in America and have the access to it here from a security point of view. And then number two is, when these things happen, we need to take them seriously from the very beginning and begin preparing. Begin ordering test kits, begin ordering PPE, and don't wait until we have a complete crisis or a mess, because the cost of fixing it later is always much greater.
This is where I raise my hand in class, Gene, and I say, what if you're the Georgia Medical Society right now, and they're trying to open the state up, and there's economic pressure everywhere here to open everything. No one wants to be closed. No one wants to have their grandfather or grandmother die, right? So or children, or have anyone exposed to it, or have our doctors and nurses upside down, especially in a state where we have such a strong medical community. In a city like Baltimore, we have, I can't think of a city in America that has the kind of hospitals, and to your point, talking about $17.99, dropping that on me here, how long we've been doing this, and seeing my wife's life get saved twice over at Johns Hopkins in the last 6 years, I think of us as, we solve problems around here. We're first to the party. We're the ones that fix other people's problems. And I think that, over the last 90 days, that's been the more disappointing part for me as an American, is we're going to fix this. We're going to have to fix this. We have no choice, but at what cost? And this could have, and it is disappointing as a citizen, just a guy asking questions, to know that doctors were down with this in January and they were the scientists, and somewhere along the line that didn't get to Pennsylvania Avenue enough to affect this in a more positive way nationally. I know we've done a great job locally, but nationally.
So one of the things we do, the 50 state medical societies, and we let the CEO for DC call in too, but the group of us get together periodically. We meet. We were just communicating on developing plans for reopening and how do you reopen specifically around medical. And and we were having one of these kind of online discussions when Georgia made the announcement, and the Georgia CEO kind of sent a funny email out. I know they had a call in Georgia with the Georgia governor, with the physicians expressing some concern and dealing with the issues around that. But it really is a problem to just announce that you're opening. You really, even the White House, in fairness to the White House, who we haven't been too kind to, they have a very detailed plan for reopening America, which says in phase one, these things happen. In phase two, these things happen. And for example, we start doing elective surgery in phase one, and we start doing some other stuff, but there's a process. And I think that's another thing we want to think about, is making sure that we don't make a decision that actually makes the situation worse and then creates another economic catastrophe for us in 6 months. Again, this is about not about politics. It's about good policy and about bipartisan solutions that make sense, that are based on science. And I think if we do that, we'll end up with a much better outcome.
Gene, I really appreciate you laying it out in such a dispassionate and rational review of not only what happened, but what we need to do in the future. Because Nestor and I think can be accused at times of being partisan on Baltimore Positive, even though we have sung the praises of Governor Hogan from day one and the way he has handled this situation. And to hear you as a nonpartisan organization say that we need to do certain things in the future. And I don't know that I've heard anyone, Gene, talk about the importance of manufacturing the PPE here in the States. And when you were speaking, I was drawing a connection. It was very similar to the verbiage that we used to hear when folks would talk about energy independence. And they would say, it's just a national security issue to be so reliant on foreign oil. And now I hear you saying, as a representative of the medical professionals in the state that it's also a national and health emergency issue to be reliant on a foreign entity to provide us equipment that our first providers need.
Yeah, and actually, I am saying this to anybody who will listen. I think the fact that we have got these major shortages across the country of personal protection equipment, you know, N95 masks, N99 masks, standard just surgical masks, gloves, shields, the fact that we're not producing this in America is a major problem. And I think there are certain things, from a security point of view, we need to make sure that we produce adequate amounts of food with our farms. We need to make sure we produce adequate amounts of energy. Personal protective equipment for our healthcare workers needs to be on that list. We cannot be reliant on a country like China or another country for that type of product. And I think if there's one thing that I hope we take away from this, I hope it's that. And I hope there's a real effort to figure out how we make sure that that is manufactured in the United States. And I hope that Maryland, who did do a very smart thing on this front, they issued, and in fact, it's still open, they're issuing grants for the manufacture of personal protection equipment. You can go on the Maryland Department of Commerce webpage, and if you're a Maryland-based company, you can get a grant to become a producer, expand your production or change your production to produce personal protective equipment. I think that's the kind of thing we need to do on an ongoing or permanent basis.
Gene Ransom is our guest. He is the CEO of MedKai, the Maryland State Medical Society, based here in Baltimore. And I would say this to you on the brand side of what you do, which is it's kind of hard to make the doctors sexy through all of this, and the same way we could say the military or the fire and the police department after 9/11. But certainly doctors and what you've lived to serve, and they've served for, 221 years, or whatever the number's been, going back here in Maryland, that I think all of us have an incredible appreciation for doctors in a way that I did when they saved my wife's life, and what nurses do on 12-hour shifts to keep cancer patients alive, amongst others, and elderly, and what we're doing to our elderly, and these outbreaks we've had, that we really appreciate the doctors. And I know that that's not the first charge of representing them legally, but certainly from a brand of and my dear teacher friend Don Moeller, my one-time a high school guidance counselor. We don't appreciate teachers enough. When we're done with this, we're really going to appreciate doctors more, huh?
Yeah, I think that. But also, I don't want to leave out nurses,
of course,
and other healthcare workers, and frankly, even pharmacy workers, lab techs, EMTs. My brother's a professional firefighter. I gotta give a shout out to all the firefighters. I mean, there are so many people who are part of our health system, and physicians are an important piece of it, obviously, and that's who I work for and represent, and I love them dearly. But it's all of them, and I think we also should even give a shout out to grocery workers. And maybe we didn't realize how important they were, but they're putting themselves at risk as we all run into grocery stores and buy all the toilet paper. So I just think we should appreciate people who are serving us. And frankly, maybe all those teachers, we're starting to realize how valuable they are now that we're homeschooling. I think, if I have to do one more statistics problem with my daughter, I'm going to go crazy.
Billy told me he's homeschooling.
I am amazed at the moms. Nestor's interviewed some of them. I'm amazed at what the moms and dads are getting done out there. It's actually inspirational. It's just been amazing. And I don't think school will ever look the same again going forward. I said to someone the other day, I think the whole idea of a snow day as we've known it will never again be. In other words, I think systems will set their calendars. On any snow day, there will be long-distance digital learning. Teachers will be online with students. Parents won't have to worry about the end of the year being adjusted, spring break being shortened. I think snow days, as we've known them as a historical concept in the United States of America, will be relegated to the scrap heap.
Oh, even in the Hereford zone?
Even in the Hereford zone.
Hey, all right.
While we've got you, you've been down in Annapolis fighting the good fight for years for the docs and the physicians in the state of Maryland. I'm going to ask you a couple of questions. At some point, we want to talk about two of the legendary figures, one no longer with us, one pretty ill right now in terms of Mike Miller and Mike Bush. But what are the issues that have been important to docs that you've been down there fighting for, trying to make sure the General Assembly does the right thing from your perspective?
Right. So we are, MedKai, our mission is to be the foremost advocate for physicians, patients, and the public health of Maryland. And we do spend a lot of time and energy, and we have a pretty large lobbying firm that does work for us. The big issues for us are usually Medicaid funding. We think that's really important to make sure that patients who get Medicaid get the same level of care as people who get other types of health care, and that's not always the case. We're often fighting with the trial lawyers. That's a common foe of ours. And then we tend to work on other public health measures, like things like tobacco restrictions, other types of sugary drinks, things like that. So those are kind of the big bucket issues. For us this year, our biggest concern was Medicaid funding, I would say, to a lesser extent, the trial lawyers, but Medicaid funding, because there was a lot of pressure in Annapolis this year to fund Kerwin. And obviously, if you're going to fund education, which is a laudable goal and something we all like, one of the best places to take money is from healthcare. So there's a little bit of friendly tension there. And that was one of our big concerns, was making sure Medicaid didn't get rated too badly.
Well, one of the things that Nestor and I like to do is we like to phrase it as these four dummy education experiences.
Some so call it for Nestor.
For Nestor educational experience. So folks are in their car, and they hear people talk about Medicaid all the time. We heard the dentist talk about Medicaid. Tell folks driving around the Beltway now, and they're listening in, tell them why they, as a citizen, should care about Medicaid funding in the state of Maryland. Make it simple for them.
So Medicaid is health insurance for poor people, and the way it works is the federal government sends a bunch of money to the state, and the state manages it. It is really important for essentially three reasons. One, if we take care of poor people by giving them Medicaid, they don't end up going into the hospitals or going into other places and getting care that we all pay for in higher insurance rates. So selfishly, from an economic point of view, that's a good reason to do it. Secondly, it's the right thing to do. Things like making sure that pregnant mothers and others have health insurance means that we have healthier populations, and it's the right thing to do. And the third thing is if you're unfortunate and you end up being unemployed, which we have a lot more people who are unemployed now, the way we do health insurance, it becomes a safety net. And if you're unemployed, you can sign up and get Medicaid, and then you have health insurance. One of the big fights we end up in, is we end up with situations where in Maryland, the state sometimes doesn't pay as much for Medicaid as they do for, as the federal government does for Medicare. And our argument is that we should value someone who's on Medicare, the federal program, at the same level as Medicaid, and we think the payment should be the same. And that's one of the big fights we end up in Annapolis every year.
How are you doing in the fight? Give us a scorecard.
We really got, we got jobbed a little bit by the prior administration, and the governor in Maryland has a lot of power, and the prior governor took the rates from 100%, which were mandated by Obama, down to 87% of Medicare. So that was a big hit. And since that time, we've been working with the new administration and Governor Hogan, and we have gotten it up to about 93%. So we've gone in the right direction, and that's been a big positive. So I'd say, and this year he put $4 million in new money into that fund where everybody else was either cut or held even. So he's seen the value in doing it. And frankly, that's very unusual for a Republican governor. We've had a great relationship with Governor Hogan. He helped backfill the exchange and save Obamacare in Maryland, which is not very popular for a Republican to do. He recently, in February, won the Nathan Davis Award from the AMA. Upon our nomination, which is one of the highest awards that you can get from the physician community, because we've had such a good working relationship with him. And I think you can see that with the COVID situation. He is doing what he thinks is right and what the scientists and the advisors suggest, not doing what is partisan or popular in his party.
Well, that's been very clear this week, and certainly bringing in those testing kits from South Korea earlier this week. Gene Ransom joining us here from MedKai. He is the CEO there. They're the Maryland State Medical Society. You can find them out on the web if you want to know what the doctors know. You can go to MedKai, that's MEDCHI.org. Don, any parting shots for Gene before we let him get back to the Eastern Shore with some crab cakes, huh?
Yeah, I don't want Gene to get away without, because he is such an Annapolis observer. Gene, this was the first session without Mike Bush as speaker, Mike no longer with us, God rest his soul, and without Mike Miller, who is still with us but stepped down as Senate president, talk a little bit about the legacies of the two Mikes and what you think they've meant to the state and any particular relationships you've had with the two men.
Yeah, so actually, and obviously we spent most of our time talking about coronavirus, but I also was an officer in the Democratic Party and elected. I'm the last Democrat elected in Queen Anne's County. I was a two-term county commissioner, and I didn't run for re-election when I took the CEO job because I couldn't really do both. So I was very active in the Democratic Party in a past life and was an elected official. And I got to be very close with both of them in those roles, and then I continue to be close to both of them in my job here as CEO of Medkai. Mike Bush was a big friend of physicians and, you know, had a lot of very close physician friends and really was an advocate. I mean, he did things like worked on appealing grievance. And I will say that the transition from him, Adrian was really one of his, you know, proteges. And I think there's not a lot of difference in the way the House runs now as to when it did when he left. And I think that's interesting how that dynamic has changed. Now, I would say I'm even closer with Senator Miller. Senator Miller, actually, when I ran for commissioner back in 2002 the first time and I was elected, he did a fundraiser for me. He helped me out. And I'd gotten close with him and his daughters through Young Democrats of Maryland prior to that in the 90s. And I've been very close with him. And his illness has touched me. I mean, a lot of people see him as a very kind of cold, calculating politician, and he's probably one of the best politicians I've ever met. But they don't realize that actually he really cares deeply about Maryland. And for all his politics, a lot of really good stuff has happened because of his political skill and acumen. And I don't think he'll ever get credit for a lot of the good policy that happened because of what he did, because everyone always sees him as a politician. The Senate has been very odd, and I think between it closing early and the fact that Senator Miller is still there as a member, it's been different. And I get along very well and like Bill Ferguson, and he has a lot of doctors in his district. A lot of his Hopkins doctors live there in that part of South Baltimore. So we like him as well and have a good relationship. But I'm not sure how the Senate's going to change. It was very odd the way it worked, I thought, this year. And I don't know how much of it was it because it shut early. I just feel like the full transition hasn't occurred yet, that it was somewhat stalled between Senator Miller still being there and between the session being cut short. And I think there's going to be a bigger difference in the way the Senate works going forward. I think all the new people, the fact that it took a major move to the left, I just think next year could be really interesting in the General Assembly.
Well, thank you, Gene. Thanks so much for that. Thanks for everything that you're doing to represent the docs and really the healthcare industry throughout the state. Thanks for your public service. Once again, Nestor, you said, let's get smarter. Let's have smart people on. Let's have them talk about the issues. I think we've done that today.
Well, I really appreciate the time, Gene. Gene Ransom joining us here from MedKai, the Maryland State Medical Society, your advocate, your resource, your profession, and they represent doctors who we all need and hopefully appreciate a little bit more than we even did before. But I appreciate it a lot to begin with. So we are hanging in there. We're keeping calm. We are staying local. Former County Executive Don Moeller joining us for lots of segments of Baltimore Positive. I'm still doing some NFL draft this week, before, during, and after. I told the story. Coach Billick is actually mentoring his second-year-old in math, or second-grade grandson in math via Zoom every day. So he gave a little look at that. You'll find that up in the buyatoyota.com audio vault, along with Dennis Colazzo from Coons Ford of Security Boulevard, doing those interviews this week. So a little football, keeping my Baltimore sports thing going for the little piece that we have here, but certainly focused on COVID, focused on Baltimore Positive, arts and entertainment, politicians, even Cal Ripken joining us here to talk all things Baltimore Positive. I am Nestor. He is Don from State Fair, downtown, to Fadley's and Moeller and Gary Realty. We appreciate all of our great sponsors here and staying with us through these trying times of COVID. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, and Baltimore Positive. Make sure you wash your hands.